world to sit up and recognize what she'd done. She couldn't get that in her world, so she came back to ours. But here she was living in the shadow of Ozma. So she neutralized Ozma and took the reins herself. But even that wasn't enough for her. She wanted more. I want things, too. You want things to be right. There may be a boy you want to kiss, or you may want your mother to get better. But you don't have what she has. More wanting than would fill that Kansas of yours, I'd imagine. What if you're wrong? I asked quietly. I'm not wrong. Gert's voice was firm, unwavering. Now go. You need to get all the rest you can before meeting with Glamora tomorrow. Was Gert still good? I wondered. And if not, why? Her mouth formed a thin, firm line that said she would not be answering anything else, at least not today. I found myself turning and leaving the room, and not of my own volition. Gert's invisible hand gave me a push. Back in my own quarters, I was more tired than I should have been. Somehow I was even more exhausted than I'd been after that morning's training session with Nox. By the time I'd finished wolfing down the bowl of tasteless green gruel that had materialized in my room, I was so exhausted that instead of bothering to take my clothes off, I collapsed into the bed still dressed. My bed was barely a bed at all. It was just a bunch of pillows and sheets piled into a sunken pit in the middle of my room. But I'd already discovered it was more comfortable than any mattress I'd ever slept on. Sinking into it felt like sinking into a dream. Despite how tired I was, and despite how good it felt to finally get to lie down, I heard Gert's thoughts echoing in my head as I tried to settle into sleep. Who are you? I should have had an answer to that. Everyone should have an answer to that. But I didn't. My first lesson with Glamora was something completely different. When I stepped into her room the next morning, she looked up from behind a jewel-encrusted vanity that was unlike anything else in the caves. Actually, Glamora's entire quarters were like nothing else in the caves. It was pretty easy to forget we were underground at all. There were rugs hanging from the walls of the cave in rich purples and reds, and carpeting the floor. Her bed was heaped with white fur. And there was a whole wall covered with mirrored closets so stuffed with dresses that the doors were all standing half open. One just contained jewelry, necklaces and rings and earrings spilling out onto the floor. She stood from her vanity and moved to a tufted couch with a mirrored table before it. She stared at it, and a tea set appeared. She beckoned me to sit. What are we doing? We're having tea. As I sat down, a tiered tray of pastries poofed into existence right next to the tea set. The tray was laden with inside-out sandwiches and square donuts and little scones with what looked like gold-leaf chips. My mouth watered. After practically starving in Dorothy's dungeons, the idea of eating something that didn't taste like sulfur weakened my curiosity. Why not just sit and eat with the crazy purple witch? But was she trying to get to know me? Was this some kind of supernatural test I wasn't even aware of yet? Would we read the tea leaves when we finished the tea? I was so hungry that I reached out for a tiny cookie that looked like a little pane of stained glass. Glamora slapped my hand away.
Wait till the hostess pours before you touch anything, she ordered. You'll need to be careful of even the smallest of gestures when you begin your mission.
Everything you do will be watched. You'll need to get close to Dorothy, and Dorothy is smarter than she looks. Anything could give you away. She finally gestured for me to eat, and I took a bite of one of the gorgeous petit four. The flavors changed magically in my mouth, from layer cake to chocolate sorbet to some kind of banana pudding. This all came as news to me. No one had told me the plan yet. "So I'm going to be going, like, undercover or something?" I asked, my mouth still half full of pastry. Glamora looked at me disapprovingly and didn't answer my question.
"Don't talk with your mouth full. Now pour me a cup of tea."
We spent the next few hours reviewing manners, certainly something I had zero experience with back home. How to walk, how to speak, how to serve. She taught me how to curtsy, and even how to look at Dorothy. While the lesson with Gert had been full of conversation, almost like hanging out with a friend, Glamora was all business, barely even pausing on one topic before she'd moved on to the next. By the time it was over, my head was swimming with what felt like useless information. And there was going to be a lot more where that came from. As I was leaving, she handed me a stack of books. Architecture, art, etiquette, and a couple of novels. "Everyone in Oz under the age of 200 has read these. We'll discuss them all next time." She sat back down at her vanity and turned away from me toward the mirror. Her hairbrush picked itself up and began brushing her hair. What was I going to do? Challenge Dorothy to trivia? Bore her to death? "All of these?" I asked incredulously. It would take me at least a month to read half of what she'd given me.
"You'll manage," Glamora said. "And one more thing. I don't think you like me very much, and I know you don't trust me. That's a good thing. You shouldn't trust me. But you shouldn't trust anyone else here either. Every smile, every kind word, every cookie. It's all done with one goal, and that's a dead princess."
"I know that," I said defiantly. "What's your point?"
"My point is that in Dorothy's world, words like good and wicked are meaningless," Glamora replied.
As she ran her brush through her hair, it began to deepen in color, from fiery red to a deep, rich auburn. She smiled sweetly as she spoke, like she was trying to do me a favor. I knew what she was doing. She was trying to shake my faith in Gert. But why? Chapter 18. "What is wrong with that woman?" I asked Knox as he escorted me to dinner on the night of my first lesson with Glamora. He took the books she'd given me, and they dematerialized into thin air. I presumed back to my room where I could study them later. He looked at me wryly.
"You got yourself beat up, and you're learning how to do magic, but you're mad about reading a couple of books?" He laughed.
"Glamora should be the easiest part of your day." But the corner of his mouth was turned up just barely, in a way that suggested he knew exactly how difficult Glinda's twin could be.
"There's just something about her," I said. "Something that creeps me out."
"She's Glinda's twin," he replied. "What do you expect? Imagine having your other half turn on you, and knowing that one day you'll have to face her in battle."
I stopped in the hallway. Knox turned to look at me, his face aglow from the tracks of fire that lit our way from above. There was the barest hint of impatience beneath his cool surface. I picked at it like a scab. "Gert asked me who I was. But the truth is, I don't know who any of you are. Not really. And I don't even know one detail of this big plan that supposedly hinges on me."
"You don't have to know every turn of the road in order to walk down it."
"It would help to know the destination."
"You do. We're taking down Dorothy,
You know what I mean. Can't you drop the good soldier crap for a second and just be a person?
He paused for a second, as if seriously considering the question. Finally, he said, "Only Mombi and Gert know the whole plan. The rest of us only know pieces. That way, if someone gets caught, all isn't lost."
But what if...
The sound of Glamora clinking a glass prevented me from asking more questions. "Some stories aren't mine to tell," Nox said curtly. Then, as if feeling bad, he added, "Welcome to your first official dinner with the Revolutionary Order of the Wicked." And with that, he led me into the dining room. The dining room was formal, like Glamora, but spooky, too. The table was a round piece of slate suspended in air in the center of the cave. The walls were a warm chocolate brown with real live honeysuckle flowers growing all over. The table was set with black china. Another upside-down tree was suspended over the table. Mombi, Gert, and Glamora were already seated. Nox nodded toward a chair, and then took the one next to it. I sat down, nervously. I hadn't had a sit-down dinner with my mom since I was 12. Our trailer only had a fold-out table that Mom had covered with tabloids and unpaid bills. Gert mumbled a few words under her breath, and our glasses filled with red liquid. I guessed if we were old enough to fight, we were old enough to drink wine. The plate in front of me was again piled with green goo. At least I had a reason to appreciate Glamora now. Her tea parties might be the only appetizing food I'd be getting from here on out. "Well, how did our girl do?" Mombi asked, looking at me.
"She had absolutely no manners," said Glamora crisply, all too eager to answer first. "Whatever they were teaching her on that tin farm, they should be ashamed."
They weren't teaching me anything. If I followed Mom's example, I wouldn't even know how to use a fork. When she actually bothered to eat, Mom's food of choice was bugles right out of the bag. Or, if I pushed hard enough, cereal right out of the box.
"But she has fine bone structure, don't you think, Nox?" Glamora continued, winking at Nox.
I swallowed a gulp of the wine, which tasted vaguely like flowers. Did Glamora actually just give me a compliment? And what was with the winking?
"Amy has great potential," Gert jumped in.
Potential was a word that had hovered over my head for the last 5 or 6 years at school. Wasted potential. Had it followed me here? Mombi pressed the subject.
"Did she accomplish anything without your aid?"
"No, but she will," Gert said. Mombi sighed.
"We don't have much time."
"It's just that for a girl who says so much, she does not yet know herself." Ouch. It sounded different when Gert said it just to me instead of saying it in front of everyone else. Plus, they were talking about me as if I weren't sitting right in front of them. Nox cleared his throat. Here we go, I thought. Now he has a chance to really lay into my failures.
"You can't judge her now. She is doing the best that she can under the circumstances."
The wine glass slipped in my hand. I caught it, but not before a few drops spilled on the table. Nox glanced at me and raised an eyebrow. Was he seriously defending me? Glamora erased the spill with a wave of her hand. I looked up at Nox. It didn't make any sense. Mombi studied him appraisingly, as if she was just as surprised as me. "It takes most charges years to learn what we want her to do in a month," he explained. "She isn't even from here. What did you expect? No one can do that." Suddenly, I realized why he was being so nice. He genuinely sounded like he couldn't wrap his head around the idea of me ever being a real witch.
You did, Mombi countered. I was a kid. It's easier.
Dorothy did,
Glamora added. I can speak for myself, I blurted. And honestly, what do I really have to know how to do in order to be bait? I had put it all together in my head. I was now a fugitive from the palace, and one who Dorothy had a very personal interest in. They wanted to use me to distract her. That had to be it. I'm right. I'm bait, aren't I? Gert opened her mouth to answer, probably to say something comforting. But she stopped herself. She actually looked surprised, which was a real feat for someone who could read minds. But then I realized she wasn't looking at me. I swiveled in my chair to follow her gaze and gasped. Standing behind me were two girls, dripping in blood. They weren't like any girls I had seen before. The tall one had red hair and a deep purple scar in the center of her forehead, about the size of a silver dollar and as smooth as exposed bone. The other girl had blonde hair and piercing green eyes and a small heart-shaped mouth, but honestly, it was hard to focus on that because while half of her face was flesh, like mine, the other half was made out of metal. The two sides bolted together with big, thick screws. Her neck was the same, divided down the center, and her left arm was metal, too. I couldn't see her legs under her pants, but I wondered if her whole body was the same way. The two girls were leaning against one another. Or, rather, the tin girl was leaning into the taller one. I couldn't see the wounds underneath all the blood, but she looked more hurt. Mombi was at the girl's side in a blink.
Where? What?
Quadling country. The lion, mumbled the tall girl with the round scar.
Mombi disappeared in a plume of smoke. Instead of helping the bloody girls, it was clear she'd gone to check out the where and the what. Nox twitched beside me at the word lion. He leaped to his feet, Gert quick to follow. Nox picked the tin girl up in his arms. A smile flickered through the woozy pain on her face.
Melindra, it's going to be okay. I've got you.
For the first time since I met him, Nox looked like he cared. Gert's hand glowed as she touched the girl's arm.
Let's get her to the spring.
Before I knew it, the girls and Nox and Gert were gone. When I turned back to the table, Glamora leaned back in her chair and took another bite of the goo. Being abandoned with no explanation didn't bother me. What bothered me, suddenly, surprisingly, was how much more Nox cared about helping this other girl.
Sit, Glamora commanded at our next lesson, pointing to her vanity as we entered her cave.
I was distracted, still irked by what had happened over dinner the night before. Those girls had shown up covered in blood, and I was here to learn how to curtsy? I slouched away from her, knowing how much it would bother her. I didn't sit. I touched her things instead. The vanity was covered with little glass figurines that looked like maybe they were once part of a really ornate chess set. I rolled a glass queen in my palms and heard a deep exhale from Glamora, like she was trying to keep calm. I rolled my eyes, too. It was a small act of protest, but it registered like an earthquake for Glamora.
Sit,
she ordered again without raising her voice, but she snatched the figurine from my hand and placed it back on the vanity. The other figures moved back into place, too, on their own. I wondered if Glamora's real gift wasn't etiquette, but some kind of witchy OCD. I obeyed this time, sitting on the chair but immediately twisting away from the mirror to face her. She took her hair out of its intricate bun, and it fell in pretty waves well past her shoulders, framing the deep V of her purple dress and impressive cleavage. With her hair down, she looked even more like her evil sister.
I may not have Gert's or Mombi's gifts, but I do have many things to teach you, my dear, Glamora said.
I reached for the queen figurine again. It moved away from me. Glamora sighed.
Showing is sometimes better than telling.
I looked up at her as she placed her perfectly manicured hands over her face and then pulled them away like she was playing peekaboo with a toddler. I gasped. Her right cheek had a lunar-shaped hole in it. I could see her tongue. I could see her perfect white teeth.
What happened to you? I asked, horrified.
Family can hurt us better than anyone.
Why would Glinda... What happened?
Glinda wanted to make sure that no one mistook me for her anymore. Looking exactly like your enemy can potentially be an advantage when we are on the brink of war, and she didn't want me to have that advantage.
Glamora didn't seem embarrassed or ashamed of it, but letting me see her scar was clearly a big deal, especially for someone so beautiful. And Glamora was still beautiful, even with her face carved up. Beautiful was in the way that she moved and spoke. Beautiful was an action, as well as a description.
Why don't you use the spring? I asked carefully.
Glamora ran her fingers over the scar almost lovingly.
When she faces me, I want her to face what she's done.
I shook my head. I've seen her. I've seen what she's become. You don't really think she'll see this and beg for forgiveness, do you? I wondered if she was hoping that there was some part of her that still did. That was hoping Glinda would see the scar and be sorry. I knew a little about hoping for that, and I knew a lot about being disappointed. Glamora laughed, a big bell of a laugh that went up so high that I felt like I needed to cover my ears.
There is no more room for forgiveness, not for me. I want the scar to be the last thing she sees before I end her.
Glamora's eyes studied mine, waiting for some kind of reaction. She didn't kill you, I said slowly. She was clearly close enough to do that, but she didn't kill you.
When you're a witch and a twin, you're connected. I used to be able to see what she was doing. I could feel when she was in pain. But since she did this, I don't feel her anymore. I don't see her anymore. There's a chance that if the knife went all the way through me, then it would go all the way through her as well. Killing me could very well end her own life.
But isn't that true for you too? If you go after her, you could kill yourself.
That's the difference between us. I wouldn't hesitate if the outcome was ridding the world of her evil.
I stared at Glamora as she touched her cheek, and the scar disappeared, and she looked perfect and whole once again. When I first saw Glamora just a few days ago, I thought she was the scariest thing in the world, because I had thought she was Glinda. But now that I'd seen the real Glamora, I wondered if maybe she was scarier than Glinda after all.
Now, let's get started, shall we?
She put her hand on my shoulder and gently turned me around to face the mirror. There were only two mirrors back home in the trailer, the broken one in our tiny bathroom, and the one over my 10 million-year-old dresser that was warped and had a kind of funhouse quality that made my face appear even narrower than usual. I spent as little time as possible looking into either one of them. This mirror was different. Or maybe I was. I caught my breath. There was something tough in my eyes. Tougher than before, if that was even possible. The pink was washing out of my hair, giving way to dirty blonde. Cheap hair dye.
"Very pretty,"
Glamora said, looking at me without an ounce of irony or fake sincerity. I tried to get out of the chair, but she put her hands on my shoulders and pushed me down.
"Very pretty,"
she repeated with the same certainty as Gert when she'd asked me who I really was. Like she wanted to make sure I believed her. Like she somehow knew that no one had actually called me that in my entire 16 years. Since I got here, Glamora had been judging my every move based on some crazy standard of etiquette. So the kind words threw me.
"What's underneath is everything, Amy.
But that doesn't mean you can't enhance it.
Beauty has its own kind of magic,
and the appearance of something can have power, too." She tossed her own hair, and it changed from deep auburn to pale lavender, then back again. She touched my hair.
"What will it be?"
"You don't like the pink?"
"When I first saw you, Amy Gum, your hair was the thing that gave me hope for you. For all of us."
"Seriously?" Glamora scrunched up her perfect nose as if hair color were something too sacred to make light of.
"When Dorothy landed here in that precious gingham number, I knew she was trouble."
"You knew Dorothy when she first arrived?"
"Back then, I was where my sister was. That is, until she found her place at Dorothy's side. No one else sensed it, I don't think, but I did. Something about that much sweetness didn't feel right."
"But you didn't have an ounce of sweetness, and that hair was just the exclamation point." "Thank you," I said, "I think."
"It is a compliment. I'd take a million Mombies over one Dorothy. I don't know about your tin farm, but here, sugar can be a poison."
She fluffed out my hair with her hands, as if shaking off the Dorothy cloud that passed over her face. "I want to keep it. I like the pink," I said, more brightly than I usually said anything. Glamora's fingers passed through my hair, adjusting the color. First blue, then green, then back to pink. A better pink. With depth of color and shine that my hair had never had even when it was its natural color. The dirtiest of blondes. Now it was just north of cotton candy pink. I remembered rinsing out my hair in the sink of the trailer just a few days and a tornado ago. I had thought that changing my hair would change something about my gray little life. And now? Now I had the perfect shade of pink and more change than I knew what to do with. She blinked, and my cheeks were rosier. Again, and my lips were a deep red gloss. And again, and a delicate pattern of green and gray shadow made half moons over my eyes. And again, and my lashes seemed to grow a quarter of an inch. One more time, and glitter showered from above me. Glitter made me think of Madison, sparkling like a damn disco ball in the hallway back at school. But then I saw that Glamora's glitter was nothing like Madison's. It knew exactly where to go, highlighting just above my cheekbones, my eyelids, dusting my clavicle and shoulder blades, complimenting what she did with the makeup. Not like blush, but like something more natural, or rather, supernatural.
In the mirror, I saw Nox appear in the mouth of the cave. I hadn't seen him since yesterday, when he disappeared with the injured girl.
"Is she?"
I asked, turning to face him. Nox's mouth opened, but nothing came out as he stared at me. Glamora giggled. Nox found his voice.
"She's doing fine," he said with a cough. "The wounds were deep, but she's strong."
Glamora's eyes lit up on Nox.
"What wonderful timing you have. Doesn't she look beautiful?"
She winked, but I couldn't tell if it was at Nox or at me. Soon after Nox's arrival, Glamora had declared we were done for the day, so Nox walked me back to my room. But that could have been because my room was on the way to his room. I wondered what Nox's room looked like. He probably slept on the floor, or some austere stone slab like the one back in my cell in the Emerald City. Nox didn't comment on my makeover. "What happened to them?" I asked Nox as we walked. "What was that scar in the middle of her forehead from? Why did the other one? Why is she... Did the lion do that to her?" I thought of the girl's bloody half-tin face and shuddered. Nox shook his head.
"Melindra's been half-tin for a long time. She is one of the few people to escape from the Scarecrow's labs."
"The Scarecrow did that to her?" I'd seen him in the throne room, but he had looked pretty harmless compared to the Tin Woodman. He nodded and continued.
"Annabelle's a Horner. Was a Horner, from Quadling Country. Their horns contained powerful magic. Dorothy offered large rewards for them. There aren't any Horners anymore." I tried to picture a unicorn horn in the center of Annabelle's pretty forehead. Magical or not, having something growing out of my forehead was not something that would have gone over well where I came from. But when I imagined someone trying to chop it off, I shuddered. Ollie's wings, Melindra's arm and face, Annabelle's horn. The body part count was rising every time I learned anything new about this place.
"They're just kids," I said slowly. "They should be going to school. They should be doing normal kid stuff like having fun and torturing girls like me." Nox shook his head, like the idea of kids being kids had never even been a possibility for any of them. He sighed and looked at me like I didn't understand anything.
"When Dorothy rolls through a town, she takes the adults, the people who can work. Some of them go to work for Glinda in the magic mines, or for Dorothy in the palace. Some of them get brought to the Scarecrow to be his toys."
His toys?
He got it in his big brain to help Dorothy, finding ways to extract magic, helping the Tin Woodman build a better army. But in his spare time, he experiments. While I digested this, he went back to Dorothy. "Sometimes she'll take some of the kids, too, but most of them get left behind."
"So you guys scoop them up and put them to work for you instead?"
It sounded like an accusation, like I was judging them.
And maybe I was. Nox nodded.
"Is that really any better?" I asked. He just shrugged. "It was for me," he said. "I was one of them. It was Mombi who found me. My parents were dead. I was almost dead myself. It was Mombi who taught me magic, taught me everything I know now. She taught me to be a person again. If it wasn't for her..."
He trailed off. I tried to imagine Nox as a little boy, but I couldn't.
I couldn't imagine him being carefree or vulnerable or innocent. I tried to imagine Mombi rescuing a little boy, taking him in and being a mother to him. That was even harder to imagine. And as repayment, she made you fight? Dorothy took everything from me. Dorothy took everything from those kids back there. I choose to fight, he said fiercely. Sometimes it felt like we were in the middle of some argument that I had already lost. He was just so sure of everything. But what if he was sure about something that was more wrong than right? I didn't know what to say to that, so I didn't say anything until we got to the opening of my cave. I dragged my fingers through my freshly colored hair and mumbled a goodnight. I liked it before.
What?
I asked, turning back to him. That face. My face? He liked my face before. Was this a setup for some kind of insult? Don't get me wrong. Glamora's magic is effective, but it's almost a shame to see it change. I haven't seen one with so much written there. Every thought right there on the surface. It's a rare thing in a place like this. For the first time, I didn't think that he was trying to hurt me. Maybe he spoke only one language. The truth and nothing but. It had stung like hell, but it made what he was saying now sound all the more real. In a place like this, that little bit of truth might be a compass in an upside-down world. But I suppose Glamora's thinking ahead. If you're going to fight Dorothy, you need to build a wall instead of a window.
Is that what you did?
He shrugged noncommittally. I don't think mine was ever a window. His chin jutted up the tiniest bit further into the air, like he was rising above something. I wanted to know what, but he was already walking away. Chapter 19 The next day, I woke to see that Glamora's makeover had stuck. Pink cheeks, perfect hair. But the change in my appearance didn't help me with my lessons. In the morning, I saw Nox for training, which resulted in more bruises for me to wash off in the spring. With Gert, I still wasn't able to produce any magic. Finally, almost out of sympathy for me, she cast a listening spell with the snap of her fingers, and we listened to Glamora singing in her room. Later, I found some small success with Glamora. I poured tea without spilling a drop. After dinner, I found a trunk in my room filled with dresses. A note in Glamora's purple cursive said, "Wear one." Was it a reward? Was it possible that in all my classes I was doing best at the etiquette? If Mom could see me now. I sifted through the gowns and pulled out a pretty pale gray one that somehow complemented my hair. It was strapless silk and floor length. Although I wasn't much of a fan of dresses, this one seemed to know exactly where to hug and where to fall. I didn't know if magic could be woven into fabric or not, but it was perfect. A few seconds later, a bat wearing a purple ribbon flew in, landing on my bed. It wore a note around its neck, written in the same purple script. "Follow me." I followed the bat deeper into the labyrinth of the mountains, into a cave I hadn't been in before. It was totally Glamora. Grand, like old movie grand with a capital G. A real crystal chandelier hung from the ceiling, and a bank of what I could only guess were windows along one wall overlooked a stunningly realistic panorama of the Emerald City. But the real spectacle was beneath my feet. The floor was made of glass, and underneath it was rushing water. It must be the water that fed the spring. The effect was like standing on top of a river. It made me dizzy, For a second, I almost lost my balance.
It's not nearly the same as my ballroom back home, but it will have to do.
I spun around at the sound of Glamora's voice to find her in the corner, watching me. Just then, Nox appeared in the doorway of the cave.
You didn't wear the suit, Glamora accused sweetly.
Nox made a face and shook his head, as if whatever she'd left for him was too awful for him to even consider. Glamora waved her arms, and music filled the air. It was somewhere between jazz and pop, with a soulful, pretty voice that wrapped and unwrapped itself around the beat. It was a love song. If I didn't know better, I would think that Glamora was trying to play at matchmaking.
Very well, but a gentleman never keeps a lady waiting, Glamora insisted.
I stifled a laugh, not sure which was funnier, the idea of me being a lady or him being a gentleman. But the laugh didn't escape, because Nox was striding toward me, rearranging his face and his swagger to make it seem like this was his idea entirely. He gave a little bow. His pointy hair didn't even move when he bent over. I curtsied, determined not to give in too easily to what must be another one of Glamora's etiquette lessons. Nox took my hand and pulled me closer, putting a sure hand on the small of my back, steadying me. We began to dance. I breathed him in against my will. He smelled like the healing spring back in the caves, fresh and alive, and full of magic. Glamora called orders at us after every rotation we made around the room.
Posture?
I don't know how they dance where you're from, but here in Oz, no one leads.
You are equal partners in the dance, in the circle, in life.
I couldn't help but laugh at that one. Are you ever serious? Nox finally demanded, but even he was starting to break under Glamora's ridiculous instruction. Are you ever not? The dance wasn't quite a waltz, something that I'd never done but had seen in enough old movies on TV. It was more of an elaborate pentagram that crisscrossed the room over and over. Another couple appeared beside us, a pretty woman with caramel skin and green hair, and a handsome man beside her in a top hat. I opened my mouth to ask who they were. Illusions, whispered Nox as a munchkin appeared behind him.
Look at your partner, Glamora barked.
In seconds, the ballroom had filled with fake couples swirling around us. It made sense that Nox could do this. He was the most coordinated, most physical being I'd ever met. But still, with every step we took in unison, I grew more aware of him. Even if he was annoying, and arrogant, and too serious all the time, I had to admit it. He was hot. I didn't look up. I didn't want him to see anything other than indifference in my eyes. Prom was coming up in a couple of months back at school. There were already posters in the halls with a really cheesy silhouette of a couple lit from behind by the moon. The theme was A Night to Remember. I was never going to go to prom anyway. And it's not like anyone would be dancing even remotely like we were now. But I suddenly realized that this might be as close as I would come to A Night to Remember. Dancing with a witch boy who didn't want me here. As we danced, I dared to steal glances at his face. In this moment, Nox didn't look like he didn't want me here. Maybe it was years of Glamora instruction, and he was simply good at being a gentleman. Maybe it was the tapping of her foot to the music against the floor that was almost hypnotic. But he didn't look completely tortured.
Remember, Glamora said, her voice floating across the dance floor,
This isn't a battle. Unless it is. In which case you should still keep your eyes on one another to make sure that no one makes a move that isn't wanted.
Glamora laughed, like it was an inside joke with herself.
Nox's face shifted suddenly, like he was remembering something.
You think that you're too good for us,
Nox said, the brightness of his voice not matching up with his words.
Excuse me?
No one ever thought I was too good for anything. I grew up in a freaking trailer.
Gert says you're holding back. You're afraid to be like us.
That's not true. I'm afraid to be like Dorothy, not the rest of you.
You're already like us, you know. You wished for this. You wished to be as far away from your mom as you could get, and your wish came true.
How do you know that? And anyway, that doesn't make me wicked, or formerly wicked either, I argued. I tried to drop his hand, but he wouldn't let me go.
You're afraid to do anything but wish for things to happen to you.
You wish you could go show up on your dad's doorstep, meet his new wife and new kid. You wish you could say all the things you want to say to him. You wish you could have left your mom on your own. You've wanted to run away for almost as long as you can remember. But it took a tornado to do it. You couldn't even make that happen on your own.
He gripped my hands even tighter and pushed me forward in the dance like I was a puppet.
Why was he saying all this? More importantly, how did he know?
Gert. Nox wasn't in my head reading my thoughts. Gert was. She'd fed him my secrets. My entire life, it seemed.
I had never done anything. He was right. I did go through my life just reacting to other people. When I was young, I had escape plans. Big, grand, dumb ones. I was going to start fresh somewhere where no one knew me and no one would call me Salvation Amy. But that part didn't sting as much as the dad thing did. I did think about going to visit him. All the time. I'd have some excuse like I was selling candy for school. And I would see the life he left us for. The pretty wife, who was no prettier than Mom before she started with the pills. The little girl or boy, technically my sister or brother, who she was pregnant with when they moved away to Jersey. I was going to show up and meet them and warn that little girl or boy that one day Dad would get tired of him or her, too.
Glamora tapped her foot on the glass floor to the beat of the music.
You're losing the beat, Amy.
Nox leaned in and dropped his voice to whisper words that I hadn't heard since I stepped into Oz.
Am I right, Salvation Amy?
The room spun. I wasn't sure if I was dizzy from him or from my anger. I dropped his hand. He reached for me, but his hand missed me completely and grabbed the air next to me. I was standing in a new spot, across the room from where I started.
What the hell? How did I...
Had I... Was it possible? Had I moved myself across the room?
Don't you see? You did it.
I heard Gert's voice. She appeared in the center of the room. She'd been here all along. I felt hot. More specifically, my hands felt hot from casting the spell. She had done this on purpose. Made Glamora and Nox bring me to this room and beat at me until I couldn't take it anymore. Like dipping me under the spring, she did what she thought she needed to do. But this time, she'd gone too far. The room spun again. My hands got hotter. Light seemed to shoot from them. Not the gentle glow I'd seen from Gert. A searing red glow, like darts of fire. The fire dart seemed to be seeking Nox, But Nox lit up with a weird blue light of his own, and the dart seemed to deflect off him. More darts came off my hands, even though I wasn't actually directing them. They shot straight up into the air and showered down like firecrackers. I was angry. Too angry. No turning back angry. I wanted to run away from him, from Gert, from all of them, but I couldn't move. Nox made a beeline toward me and grabbed my glowing hands with his own. In a blink, we were standing outside the caves on the same spot he'd taken me the first day of training, the peak of the mountain, this time looking out into a deep black sky dotted with strange constellations where the familiar ones should have been. These stars were different from any stars back home. For one thing, they were brighter. For another thing, where the constellations I was used to never seemed to match the images they were supposed to resemble, these formed themselves into clear pictures the longer you gazed at them. There was a horseshoe, and a bear, and a tiger, and a dragon, all as clear as pictures in a book. Gert thought home was stopping you from doing magic. We had to push. We had to know. He pointed into the distance. Look, that one's always been my favorite. As he pointed, a group of bright white pinpricks rearranged themselves into the image of a bicycle. As I looked at it, a memory came back to me. My mother teaching me to ride a bike when I was 5. Before we'd moved to Dusty Acres. It was the first time I'd ever tried it without the training wheels, and Mom had promised to hold on so I didn't fall. But at some point, as I'd raced down the hill, the wind in my hair, I'd let out a whoop of triumph. I was doing it! It was only at that moment that I'd realized Mom had let go. I was on my own. That was when I went crashing to the curb. When I crawled back to my feet, my knee scraped and bloody, my bike in a tangled heap on the ground, I'd looked up the hill to see my mom standing at the top, clapping for me. I had been pushing back thoughts of Mom on a regular basis now. All Gert's talk of forgiveness had planted a seed that I did not want to let grow. I'd told myself that all I'd been thinking about was where my fist was going next, about trying to light a candle just by thinking about it, and remembering all the stuff in all the books Glamora had given me. But it wasn't true. She was still there no matter how much I didn't want her to be. And now, standing on the top of the mountain with Nox, all I could think about was my mother. I was an idiot. For a few minutes I had been thinking about prom and dancing with Nox, and how he maybe didn't hate it, and he was just following witchy orders. And somehow that almost made me more angry. "It matters how you do this," I said through clenched teeth, staring him down. "What you do to get there. You can't just kill someone. The ends do not make it okay." His eyes shifted away from mine, and then back again. I saw something pass over his face. Guilt. Regret. No, it was maybe something else, like curiosity or realization. Like he was happening upon completely new information. Like it had never occurred to him that I would be hurt or mad or anything like that. Like being able to do magic trumped everything. We're the only ones willing to take her down. The only ones capable. It's us or nothing. We're doing one bad thing for the good of Oz. "Do you ever not speak the witch party line? Do you ever make a decision that is all your own?" His eyes flicked away from mine. "Do you always ask so many questions?" "Do you ever ask any? You know absolutely everything there is to know about me, and I don't know anything about any of you.
Not really.
The cockiness from the dance floor was gone. He slipped out of it so easily it was a surprise.
Do you really want to know who I am? He asked.
I should have said no and backed away from him. But even though I was mad at him, I still wanted to crack him open and see what was inside. I nodded.
I'm not Nox.
What?
Nox is just the name Mombi gave me. I don't remember my real name. I remember my parents, their faces, the way they smelled and sounded. I remember the day that they were taken from me. But my name washed away with them, and there's no one alive who remembers it.
Nox.
It was in the beginning, when Glinda and Dorothy were just starting to mine everything and everywhere. Glinda hadn't figured it out yet. She wasn't using the Munchkins. She was just using her own magic to mine magic. She blasted a hole in the center of the town and, boom, she hit the water table. Everything flooded. We climbed up to the roof. There was this old weather vane up there that was so rusty it didn't even move when the wind blew. I remember my mother told me to hold on to it no matter what. And I did. But my mom didn't. Or couldn't. I wanted to let go too, but I held on like she told me to. When the water went down, no one in the village was left except me.
I inhaled sharply. Did Mombi find you then?
Later. Much later, I think. I went from town to town. I stole when I had to eat. I slept where I could. Sometimes people were good to me, and sometimes they were horrible. Mombi saved me during one of those horrible times. I stumbled upon the wrong town. The lion was there. But so was Mombi. He glanced up at me, then looked away sharply. He didn't want my pity. What I said back there when we were dancing. I'm sorry I had to do that. I needed to get a reaction from you. You've been fighting all along. You raised yourself. I had an army and 3 witches.
Something hit me all at once. What Gert said about magic. How can you use it if you don't know who you are?
I know exactly who I am.
But you said,
I am a fighter. I am a member of the Revolutionary Order of the Wicked.
It occurred to me, maybe Mombi hadn't rescued him out of the kindness of her heart. Maybe she had done it to make a perfect soldier. If all Nox had was a faded memory of some woman who may have been his mom, all Nox had ever really had was the Order. And all his magic came from there, from the person they made him. He was as pure as the magic that ran through the spring. He was all magic. Hardly a boy at all. He was the knife that he told me he could train me to be. I wasn't sure if I pitied him or envied him. Would I trade away the few good memories of my mom to get rid of all the bad ones? I thought the answer was yes. But who would I be without those memories? Who was Amy Gum without her past? I was running away from home. Nox was marching toward home. Home was battle for him. And maybe it was for me, too. Nox grabbed my hand suddenly. Magic is just energy that wants to be something different, he reminded me. So take what you're feeling right now and turn it into something different. Turn it into magic. I looked at Nox. I wished this moment had been the starting place for today's lesson, not what he did on the dance floor. But I pushed that aside, and I tried to do what I'd seen him do. Tried to do what I saw Glamora and Mombi and Gert do. Be both in my skin and a part of the magic around it. I felt the energy coursing through my body like warm water. I thought of my mother, I thought of the question Gert had posed. Who are you? I focused on my sadness, the sadness I'd felt for my whole life, and I